Chapter 10 Communications and Management and Related Ideas. Introduction, Definitions, and Discussion. What do managers do? The theoretical answer is, they plan, organize, lead and control, and the real answer is they communicate. That is, managers spend much of their time talking, listening, writing and reading, in their efforts to plan, organize, lead and control. They give orders to subordinates, and they take orders from their superiors, they might interview job candidates, they listen to employees discussing problems, they read and write memoranda, letters and reports. These tasks are part of a complex organizational communication process. In fact, the entire organization can be thought of as a product of communications. That is, the communication is the process that links each individual that is involved directly or indirectly with the organization, such as stockholders, managers, experts, technicians, other employees, suppliers, and customers. If the communication process within an organization was turned off completely, it would eventually cease to exist. The above suggests that the communication process is extremely important for managers and organizations, but it does not explain or define the concept of communication. Hal Riegel and Slocum define this term as pages 482. The transfer of information and understanding from one person to another through meaningful symbols. This was a quote. Robbins defines communication as PG1, the transference and understanding of meaning. This was a quote. I am defining and explaining the concept in more detail in the following paragraph. Communication is the process of transmitting, receiving and comprehending information. The word transmitting implies a source of the information, which can be any system that is capable of sending information. The word system means here a person, a group, an organization, or even an animal or machine, such as a computer. The word receiving implies one or more systems, the listener S or the audience, that receives the information. The word comprehending means one or more of the following: the information is understood by the listeners, or the system responded to the data in a desirable way or in a way that would suggest understanding. The word information is used in an extremely general way, and it means one or more of the following: data, emotional components, messages, ideas, instructions, orders, thoughts, etc. Communication can also be defined as the process of encoding information and transmitting it to a receiver that can decode it. Encoding means putting data, emotional components, messages, ideas, instructions, into a code, such as spoken or written language. The words receiver that can decode it mean one or more individuals, groups, organizations, machines, animals, etc., that can interpret or comprehend the information that was transmitted to it. The interpretation or comprehension process, as the terms are used here, means decoding of the information. The decoding is never perfect, and when it fails, communications in any meaningful sense of the term did not take place. Note the definition in the above paragraph does not apply to nonverbal communication, because nonverbal cues are usually not encoded or even deliberately produced in most cases. It is usually, but not always, a secondary response of the muscles and limbs in relation to the verbal message and the emotional components related to the communication situation. Of course, people sometimes deliberately control their facial expression, such as smiling, while they are communicating, but this is not really encoding of information. Nonverbal communication does not really have to be decoded either, but it does have to be interpreted. Decoding is, in fact, a special type of interpreting based on translating the linguistic code into thoughts or mental data. However, there is no linguistic code involved with nonverbal communication. End of note. The communication process involves more than spoken and written language. It can involve seeing, hearing, touching, and even smelling. These components are involved in the nonverbal communications process. Nonverbal communication that accompanies spoken language includes body movements, facial expressions, pauses in the flow of speech, stammering, rate of speaking, tone of voice, style of dress, and perfumes and other odors from the body can also convey a nonverbal message that can modify the meaning or significance of spoken language. In written language, nonverbal communication includes punctuation, graphics, the color of the ink, the style of font, the size of the letters, the type and quality of the stationery used to write on, and how the message is sent, such as by private messenger, certified mail, first-class mail, fax, email, etc. Nonverbal communication does not generally carry any precise information by itself, but it can determine how a verbal message is to be interpreted. For example, the phrase "I want to kill you" can mean all of the following. It can mean a friendly compliment, such as when a friend smiles and pats you on the back when you won him in a competitive game. It can be a complaint, such as when a superior who is annoyed with your behavior expresses an angry facial expression, which can sometimes be coupled with a pointing finger. It can truly be a threat to your life, such as being threatened by one or more strangers with angry expressions on their faces and weapons in their hands. From the above, it is apparent that the context and the individuals involved also determine the meaning of a message. If you are at work or at home and your boss or father says he wants to kill you, you know your life is really not being threatened. However, if you find yourself in the middle of a violent riot, and you are approached by a stranger carrying a baseball bat, the same words suggest a true threat to your life. Thus, primary considerations in the communication process are the verbal message, the nonverbal cues, the source of the message, and the context. When a verbal message is transmitted, it must be put in a linguistic form that can be understood by the audience. It ideally should be accompanied by nonverbal cues that help the listener properly interpret the message. When receiving a verbal message, you must attempt to interpret its intended meaning, which can be done with the aid of the nonverbal cues. However, a truly skilled listener will reflect their interpretation back to the sender to confirm the meaning of the message. For example, if your boss tells you to arrive early next Monday, you can check the meaning of a statement by saying, "I will be here at 8:30 a.m. on Monday, December 30th. Is that okay?" Giving this type of feedback to the communicator can reassure him, and it can avoid misunderstandings and confusion. In the above example, the boss could have simply been complaining about the repeated lateness of the employee, and what was meant by early could have been a request by the boss to arrive on time, at 9:00 a.m. Another description of the communication process. There are many other ways, besides the presentation delineated in the above paragraphs, of describing the communications process. Helriegel and Slocum presented the communications process as having six primary components, which are 1. Sender encoder, 2. Receiver decoder, 3. Message, 4. Channels, 5. Feedback, and 6. Perception. This was a quote. Robbins presented a similar model of the communications process, which consists of the following 7 components. This was a quote. 1. The communication source, 2. Encoding, 3. The message, 4. The channel, 5. Decoding, 6. The receiver, and 7. Feedback. This was a quote. The following discussion is primarily based on both of these models, but the numbering and words in quotation marks are from Helriegel and Slocum. 1. Sender encoder. This was a quote. The sender is the individual that is attempting to transmit a message. The sender tries to put the information into a message that is worded in a way that will be understood by the receiver. This is called encoding. In the model Robbins presented, the source or sender was numbered 1 and the encoding process was numbered 2. In the Helriegel and Slocum model, these two components were combined into one step. However, if the source of a message is considered separately, the following additional insights become apparent. The source of a message is of primary importance to most people. People determine the relative significance of a message based on the prestige and power of the source. For example, if an individual with extremely low prestige, such as a derelict, asks for directions, he might be ignored by most people. However, a similar request made by a person with average prestige would obtain an immediate and polite response in most cases. An individual with above average prestige would most likely get an even better response. This general idea can be applied to the communications that take place in organizations. The individual with relatively high prestige will get better responses from his communication efforts than an individual with lower prestige. Upper management might ignore the low prestige communicator and give great weight to the communications efforts of the high prestige individual. As a result, a high prestige individual is likely to get his message across to the people who have power in the organization. The high prestige communicator is likely to get his project accepted. The low prestige communicator might not even succeed in having the documentation he submits read. This suggests a problem for people who do not have exceptionally high prestige, and it raises the question, how can you increase the prestige of your statement, especially written reports requesting organizational resources for your job-related projects? The answer is to gain the support of individuals that have relatively high prestige in the organization, in relation to your communication efforts. This can be done relatively easy with written documentation, such as reports requesting special or additional resources for a major job-related project. In such a case, you simply need support letters for your project from the high-prestige individuals. Having high-prestige individuals supporting your oral communication efforts at a meeting or in private discussions with upper management can also be effective. From the perspective of the listener, a high-prestige person might have power over us, or we might believe that he has more knowledge than we do. For example, if our boss gives us an order, we will most likely give it more attention than if a friend gave us the same order. Thus, the source of the communication is a primary consideration, and it is as important as the encoding process itself. Helriegel and Slocum offered the following five-step recommendation for good encoding. A relevancy. This involves making the message relevant to the individual S that will receive the message. This can be done by the careful use of symbols and gesture. It is especially important to avoid phrasing that inadvertently makes your message irrelevant, such as using wording that is offensive to your listener S. You can also make a message relevant by adding something interesting or rewarding to it. For example, if you tell your secretary that there is a report that must be typed and completed today, the message is certainly not interesting from his perspective. In fact, the message would probably be quite burdensome. However, if you add that the only work he has today is typing the report, and he can leave early after the report is typed, he will probably be quite interested in your message and probably inclined to complete the report before the morning is over. B. Simplicity. Making the message as simple as possible is a recommendation that is made by most sources on communication and writing. This can sometimes be achieved by using simple words, eliminating unnecessary words, eliminating unnecessary information, and dividing complicated messages into several simpler messages. However, a common problem associated with simplicity involves oversimplification, which can distort the message, leave out essential information, and/or make the entire message incomprehensible. This type of oversimplification can be seen in certain technical writing, where there is an effort to reduce the number of words, by not defining terms and by using an inadequate number of words to describe and explain. Thus, text should be simplified when possible, but the oversimplification that leads to inaccurate or incomprehensible text should be avoided at all costs. See organization. Organizing the message so it is broken up into a series of points that can be easily understood. The points should be arranged in an order that would appear logical to the listener or reader. Ideally, each point should make the listener or reader infer the basic idea that will follow. Of course, this cannot always be achieved. D. Repetition. People usually do not like repetition in spoken or written language. Unnecessary repetition should be avoided. However, repetition is often necessary, especially in spoken language. Repetition can be essential if you are trying to convey new information, such as in an instructional effort involving either written or spoken language. Helriegel and Slocum suggest restate key points of the message at least twice. Repetition is particularly important in spoken communication, because words may not be clearly heard or fully understood the first time. This was a quote. To avoid sounding repetitious when repeating the message, you can convey it with different words. Repeat the message at different points in time, have two or more individuals repeat the message for you, transmit the message in writing, and follow up with a telephone call or personal visit to discuss the message. Another alternative is to coax the listener to explain what he heard, which will facilitate memory and make any needed corrections apparent. E. Focus your words, whether spoken or written, on the key points of your message. Make the message clear and avoid unneeded or confusing detail. To receiver decoder. This was a quote. The receiver is any number of individuals or a group who are receiving the message. That is, the receiver is one or more listeners. A good listener tries to interpret the message sent by the encoder in the way he believes the encoder intended the interpretation to be. A listener also might interpret the message from other perspectives, such as psychological, but the first and primary interpretation should always be that intended by the sender. For example, an employee might be told by his boss, in a very angry tone of voice, to complete a number of tasks immediately. If the employee is a good listener, his first objective would be to clarify the communication and determine precisely what the tasks are. That is, if he is a good listener, he will focus on decoding the message in the manner intended by the boss. He might also inwardly interpret the boss's message in very angry tone as a form of insanity, but this additional interpretation is independent of the primary communication process. A skilled listener will understand and not confuse the difference between the decoding process and his assessment of the communicator. 3. Message. When you send your message, there are two parts to it, which are the verbal and nonverbal components. Under ideal conditions, your nonverbal cues will reinforce your verbal message. Under certain undesirable conditions, your nonverbal cues might distract from your message. This should be taken into consideration when deciding if you should communicate by written correspondence, telephone, or by a face-to-face discussion. It is possible to eliminate undesirable nonverbal cues with a written correspondence. Communication by telephone allows partial control and elimination of undesirable nonverbal facial expressions. Face-to-face communications offers little control over the nonverbal communications process. The nonverbal components can reinforce or distract from your verbal message, but the quality of your verbal message is extremely important. If you are presenting your message in a face-to-face discussion or by telephone, and it is important, it might be advisable to rehearse your message before you deliver it. This is especially the case if you are communicating with a superior who is extremely busy. The rehearsal can be done in your imagination, or with the use of an individual who plays the role of your listener. Four channels in an organization. There are a number of channels of communication. Some of these channels are formal and others aren't formal. Formal channels are officially established ways of communicating. Examples follow. An organization might schedule formal meetings for managers to discuss the job-related problems they are dealing with. Employees that want to have a private discussion with their manager might have to make an appointment during working hours. Informal channels are unofficial ways of communicating. Informal channels can involve unofficial and personal social meetings inside or outside of the organization. Examples are two managers meeting on Saturday to have a game of golf, while they discuss problems of the organization. Another example is an employee that has a friendly conversation about a job-related problem with a manager in the elevator or hallway. An important communication channel in organizations is often the grapevine, which is an informal communication system. The grapevine is the result of the natural tendency of people to socialize and share information with people they know or are interested in getting to know. Thus, information will spread through a grapevine in a more or less random or unpredictable way. As the information spreads through this informal communication channel, it might be distorted, as it passes from one person to another. This can result in a totally distorted message or the development of a rumor. The communications channels in an organization can also be divided into three basic categories based on the relative status of the communicators, which are downward, upward, and horizontal. Downward channels of communication involve a superior sending, spoken or written, messages to a subordinate. Upward channels involve a subordinate communicating with a superior. Horizontal channels involve individuals of equal status communicating with each other, such as to assembly line workers having a work-related discussion, or to first-line managers involved in a formal meeting. A truly skilled communicator might create his own channels of communication within an organization. This can involve an evaluation of the individuals that the communicator needs to communicate with. Then, form official, semi-official, and unofficial social relationships with the relevant individuals. After the above is completed, the communicator develops and maintains the channels by using them. The ongoing use of a communications channel can establish an understanding and the related behavior patterns in the relevant individuals in regard to receiving and transmitting messages. 5. Feedback. Hellriegel and Slocum define feedback as pages 492. The receiver's response to the sender's message. This was a quote. Robbins defines the closely related concept of feedback loop as pages 379. The final link in the communication process puts the message back into the system as a check against misunderstandings. This was a quote. Feedback is the response of the listener S, or reader S, to the information that was transmitted in the communications process. The feedback that is obtained usually consists of one or more of the following: a spoken statement, nonverbal cues, a written response, unintentional behavioral response, such as carrying out an order that was issued in the communication process. Feedback, as implied in Robbins' definition, is a method of checking to determine if the message was successfully transmitted, decoded, and comprehended by the listener S or reader S. Feedback is also useful to determine if there are any adverse responses or inappropriate interpretations of the message that was transmitted. Under ideal conditions, the feedback tells the communicator precisely what, if any, corrections are needed. Under less than ideal conditions, the feedback might be inadequate or even non-existent. If you are the communicator, you can elicit feedback by asking appropriate questions and listening to the response, without commenting until the feedback process has been completed. For example, you can ask questions similar to the following: how do you feel about what I said? Did you understand what I said? Do you have any comments or suggestions? If you are the listener, you can give feedback to guide the individual that is sending the message. Hellriegel and Slocum suggest that feedback should be helpful. This was a quote. Descriptive rather than evaluative. This was a quote. Specific rather than general. This was a quote. Be well timed. This was a quote. And it should not overwhelm. This was a quote. Your feedback can be in the form of non-judgmental questions or comments. Questions are especially useful in clarifying confusing sections of the message or clarifying the intentions of the speaker or writer. 6. Perception. Hellriegel and Slocum define perception as the meaning ascribed to a message by a sender or receiver. This was a quote. The problem that is inevitable in many situations is the meaning intended by the sender is not the same as the meaning perceived by the receiver. That is, the perception of the speaker, or writer, and the listener S, or the reader S can be very different, with respect to the meaning of the words comprising the message. The speaker, or writer, can have one idea in mind when he creates his message, and the listener S can place an entirely different meaning on the same words, as a result of misinterpretation. The differences between the perceptions of the sender and receiver can be the result of experiences that took place many years earlier, differences in knowledge, differences in culture or subculture, differences in language skills, differences in emotional needs, etc. In general, it is not likely that anyone will have identical perceptions about a message. When communicating with one individual, this potential difficulty can be eliminated with feedback and appropriate corrections. However, when dealing with a group of people, or even worse, a large audience, this problem cannot always be totally avoided or resolved. You might be able to obtain some general feedback or even some specific feedback from a few individuals in a group or large audience. Asking yourself the following questions can help avoid problems associated with perceptual differences between yourself and a single listener, a group, or a large audience. That is, the following questions can alert you to potential difficulties, which will allow you to correct your words in advance. Can you delineate all the ways that this sentence, paragraph, or message might be misunderstood? How can I word my message in a way that will avoid misunderstanding? Do the people I am trying to communicate with have a culture and subculture similar to myself, or are they from a different background? How does my audience perceive the subject I am trying to discuss? Do they perceive the subject similar to myself, or do they perceive it in a totally different way? Another technique of avoiding problems that result from perceptual differences is to explain your message in adequate detail. Delineating precisely what your message means can be quite helpful in preventing this type of problem. Also, explaining what your message does not mean can help avoid communications problems associated with differences in perception. When writing text, adding one or more sentences similar to the following can help avoid misinterpretation that should not be confused with the communication process and persuasion. Managers, and most human beings, are often faced with communication tasks that involve persuasion. That is, it is often necessary to convince another human being or an entire group to accept ideas, goals, desires, requests, proposals, etc. This necessity suggests the question, what is the best way to persuade an individual or a group? There is no single answer to this question, because human beings, their groups, and our persuasive efforts are all unique entities. A method that works fine in one situation might not work in another. However, there are basic principles of communication and persuasion that are likely to work in the majority of situations in our society. Some of these methods and related principles were already discussed in the preceding paragraphs. When the situation is simple, such as when you have the power and authority, and what you are requesting in relation to your persuasive effort is routine, the best approach usually is to make your statement in a polite, direct and honest way to the relevant individual S. Then, evaluate the response you obtained from the individual S, and provide additional statements if necessary to obtain your objective. This is essentially common sense. The above is not much of a problem. It is a simple persuasive task. This suggests the question, what do you do when you are faced with a difficult persuasive task, in relation to a major request or proposal? I am using the words request and proposal as synonyms in the remainder of this discussion. A general example is when you are trying to convince an individual or a group that has more power, authority and prestige than you have, to grant your request. A specific example is a lower-level manager trying to convince the CEO and board of directors to fund his plans to create a new invention, and market it under the company name. A less challenging example is a middle manager requesting additional funding for his department. Another general example is to obtain a research grant from a government agency, your school, or a private organization. Communication tasks in this category are highly challenging, and usually require detailed written explanations in the form of reports and other documentation, which may be coupled with many discussions. This type of communication persuasion process can involve many steps, such as the following 20-point method. 1. Define your goal S in relation to your communication and persuasive effort. This step is to clarify your objective S, and it does not necessarily involve communication with others. For example, you might decide that you want to increase the productivity of the engineering department, which you manage, by means of the latest computer technology. 2. Based on your goal S, delineate your proposal. This can involve writing out a brief tentative statement of what you want to ask for to obtain your goal S. Continuing with the above example, your proposal can involve asking for new computers for the department you are managing. 3. Determine the best sources to send your proposal to. This also involves choosing the best channels of communication for your request and the specific individuals that you must contact. You can sometimes use a number of channels simultaneously, such as the official channels and unofficial social channels. For example, you might decide that your request for new computer should go to all the members on the board of directors, including the CEO of the company, in terms of an official report. You might also contact the individuals on the board in the unofficial social environment and discuss the need for new computers. The above leads to the question, where do you obtain the best information for this step? You might be able to obtain this information by asking people in your work environment, making a series of telephone calls to knowledgeable individuals, and/or contacting various agencies or departments. This information might even be available in official documents in some cases. This is especially the case if you are dealing with government agencies or very large organizations. Trial and error can also lead to the information you need. 4. Submit your proposal at an appropriate point in time. This raises the question, what is the appropriate point in time to submit your request? There is no simple answer to this question. However, if you know what is happening in your organization, you might know when to submit a proposal. For example, it might be inappropriate to request a mainframe computer when the organization is facing a severe financial crisis. 5. Start your document or conversation by politely stating one or more of the following, whichever applies your purpose, the need, your request, your conclusion. Starting with the conclusion, or even your request or purpose, might sound backwards to some readers, but it often is the most efficient way to communicate, because top managers and other officials are often too busy to follow the logic that leads to the concluding statement. In situations involving technology or engineering, top managers and other officials might not have the technical background to even understand the logic that leads to your conclusion. Thus, it is usually best that your listener or reader is made aware of the primary ideas in the beginning of the communications process. For example, state that I am trying to obtain new computers for the engineering department, because it will increase productivity by at least 25%. 6. Explain why your request will benefit the company, and/or why your request is required by rules and regulations. For example, the computers that I am trying to obtain will increase productivity by more than 25%. This will result in a considerable saving for the company, because we will not have to hire additional personnel. Another example is, I am asking that the board provide immediate funding for the purchase of safety glasses for all the personnel working in the chemistry department. The company is required by law to provide appropriate safety equipment. The law and related legal requirements, or formal rules, can sometimes serve to pressure higher management or officials to support a request. 7. If you are communicating in writing, and there is a chance that all of your documentation might not be read, you should include an introductory summary as part of the opening statement. This can be 2 or 3 sentences for a short document or an entire page for a long report. For example, I strongly recommend that the board allocate funding for the purchase of new computers for the engineering department, because it will improve efficiency by more than 25%. This and related details are explained in the following paragraphs. 8. Do not be overly concerned with repetition in your documents and oral communication efforts. Repetition is likely to result when you create an introduction that summarizes your document. Most people were taught to avoid repetition, but it is often necessary in the learning and persuasion processes. That is, repeating important points and complicated information can be essential in obtaining your request. However, you should remove unnecessary repetition of non-essential information from your written proposals. Essential repetition of ideas and information should be written so it does not sound repetitious, if possible. This can be done by rewording the material that you repeat. In addition, the repetition of important points and information can be achieved by resubmitting the relevant information in different forms, such as letters, reports, formal discussions, informal conversations, which can be done over a period of time. 9. Do not be concerned about writing long documents and engaging in lengthy discussions supporting your proposal. Most of us were taught to write and even speak as briefly as possible. This is generally good advice for simple and routine situations. However, complicated requests that involve a considerable financial investment require detailed explanations, which can involve reports with many pages and long discussions. If you attempt to make such a request with a short letter, you will probably get a quick refusal in most cases, unless you own the company. However, your introductory summaries should be brief, perhaps similar to a brief letter, but it should contain the essential information. The remainder of your document should contain all the details and reasoning supporting your introductory summary. The above does not mean that brief letters cannot be used in the persuasion process. A number of short letters, sent over a period of time, can serve as reminders, provide additional information, clarify confusing points, serve a general persuasive function, etc. Of course, a number of brief letters cannot take the place of detailed documentation, but they can reinforce the impact of a detailed report. 10. Support your opening statement S and request with one or more of the following logical reasoning, explanations, experimental results, expert opinion, documentation from books or periodicals, etc. Under some conditions, even emotional persuasion can be used to support your opening statements and request, but this usually cannot be used without additional logical support. In general, honest logical explanations are likely to be the most effective support for your statements and request. For example, the computers I am requesting for the engineering department will increase productivity by more than 25% because it will allow the engineers to use computer-aided design programs. This will eliminate the need to hire 5 additional engineers, which will save the company over $200,000 a year. We need 10 computers and appropriate software, which will cost only $40,000. 11. Avoid unsupported requests or statements. For example, simply indicating that you need or want something is usually not adequate, unless you are in a power position, such as the boss, a manager talking to a subordinate, or if you are a paying customer. Another general example of an unsupported statement is stating your beliefs, without adding supporting evidence or explanations. A specific example of an unsupported statement is, "I want 10 new computers for the engineering department." 12. Avoid phrases that can be misunderstood or words that might erroneously suggest that you are contradicting your earlier statements. Some listeners and readers will focus on such phrases and develop unfavorable conclusions in regard to your communication's objective. In addition, such phrases can be taken out of context, and you can be inadvertently or intentionally quoted in such a way that you appear to be against the very ideas you are supporting. 13. Do not be vague. Make your statements precise, and you should not leave any doubt about what you are saying and supporting. If you truly have doubts, you should obtain the information you need to eliminate your uncertainty before you start the communication and persuasion processes. 14. Use words, phrases, reasoning, and arguments that will be understood and accepted by your listener or reader. The best way to achieve this is to learn about your listener or reader. If this is not feasible, you can often make reasonably good assessments by considering the role, type and quantity of education of the relevant individual. 15. Try and obtain prestigious supporters for your proposal. Individuals who have power within the organization, or knowledgeable individuals with high status, especially experts, can be of great help if they support your explanations, the information you are providing, and your request. Such support can be in the form of a written statement and/or in terms of one or more discussions with the officials you are trying to persuade. Letters from experts supporting your written request, your report, can be especially useful. 16. An exceptionally complicated proposal or request that is not likely to win a quick acceptance should be submitted over an extended period of time. For example, if you ask the CEO to spend $40,000 on new computers for the engineering department, there is a high probability that he will refuse the request. However, if you gradually supply the information he needs to make a proper decision over a period of time, you have a much better chance of obtaining your goal. The basic idea is it takes human beings time to learn, and making a major decision, such as the purchase of $40,000 of computer equipment, requires the learning process. That is, when you are persuading, you are teaching, which takes time. This is especially the case if you are trying to persuade a busy executive or official. 17. The best way to submit highly complex proposals is in the form of a series of memoranda, letters and reports, followed up by discussions. Sending letters or reports without a follow-up discussion can result in wasted effort. The busy executive S or official S might neglect to read the documentation you submitted. Even if they read your document, they might not totally understand it, which can also be remedied by a discussion on the phone or in person. You can put a statement in your documents, requesting a telephone call after the material was read. If you do not get a telephone call in 1 week after you submitted your document, you should call the appropriate individual S to discuss the material you submitted, and to determine if they had time to read it. If they did not read it, additional follow-up telephone calls are necessary until they read the material. 18. If you are getting negative responses, or refusals, it can sometimes be the result of inadequate information. Negative responses can also sometimes result from lack of comprehension of the material you submitted, which can happen if it was not completely read. The best solution usually is to try to determine what additional information you can provide to obtain a positive response. 19. Avoid hostile arguments, but do not be afraid to disagree in a polite and firm way. Disagreeing is not likely to invoke significant hostility if you are polite and you took the time to understand the opposing opinion. You should not criticize the individual S or group that you are trying to convince, but you can politely criticize any statements that are against your proposed request. This can be done in writing, if necessary, because it is easy to be polite in a document. Of course, if you are dealing with your employer, you must be especially cautious about criticizing or pushing your arguments. In other situations, it is not necessary to be overly cautious, but it is necessary to be kind, friendly, patient, understanding, and assertive. This applies even if the people you are trying to persuade totally disagree with you and treat you in a hostile manner. Keep in mind that over time, the hostility might diminish and they might support your request if you provide appropriate persuasive information. 20. If you obtain a formal refusal in relation to your proposal, answer the following questions. What are all the possible factors that led to this refusal? Are there any modifications that I can make in my request, documentation, or communication style to obtain an acceptance? After answering these questions, consider starting the process over again from step 1 in an effort to obtain an acceptance for your proposal. The concluding words, the building blocks of an organization and the communication process. Most modern industrial organizations are made up of people with different roles, abilities and skills, including stockholders, coupled with sources of raw materials and information, equipment, and land and buildings, all of which are aimed at producing one or more products or services that will interest the consumers. The above are the essential building blocks of most modern industrial organizations. Whatever the building blocks of an organization happen to be, the glue that holds the blocks together is the communication process, especially in relation to the transmission of product design, instructions, organizational culture, rules, and advertising of products and/or services. This complex communications process, the glue, travels through many channels. If there are any significant weaknesses in this complex communications process, there is a significant possibility that the organization will run into serious problems. For example, if the communication channel between the organization and consumers are inadequate, the company might inadvertently produce a product that is not needed or wanted. Another example can be a company that creates a product that is potentially quite useful, but fails to communicate the utility of the product to the consumers. In general, a company with strong and highly effective communication channels, especially between the organization and consumers, is probably more likely to prosper in the personal life of the individual. The communication process also plays a vital role. Any weaknesses in any of the communication skills are likely to severely limit the individual's life chances in all areas. Individuals with strong communication skills are probably much more likely to succeed than the average individual. From the above paragraphs, it is probably apparent that many problems can manifest in relation to the communications process. The following list of questions can be used to avoid or solve communications problems. Most of the following questions apply to both written and spoken language. What are your communication goals? Whom do you want to communicate with? Is it one individual? Do you know the individual you want to communicate with? Do you want to communicate with a group? That is, delineate your communication objective in terms of your audience and what you want to convey. Would it be more practical to divide your communication goal into several smaller messages? What would be the ideal nonverbal cues accompanying your message? Can you produce these cues? Is there a risk of inadvertently producing undesirable nonverbal cues when you send your message? To answer this question, ask yourself, how do I feel about my message? How do I feel about the individual S that I am trying to communicate with? How do I feel about myself in relation to this communications task? If you think you might produce dysfunctional nonverbal cues, would you be better off sending your message by written correspondence? Would you be better off conveying your message by telephone? Did you make your message as brief as possible? Can you make your message more compact? Or did you make your message too brief? That is, did you oversimplify your message? What type of feedback are you likely to get when you send your message? Based on your anticipated feedback, can you improve your message to obtain a better response from your listener S or reader S? Did you get adverse feedback when you sent your message? If so, what information can you derive from the feedback? Can you send another message that is corrected, based on what you learned from the feedback? Does your organization have any weaknesses in its communication channels? Can its management communicate well with its employees, and vice versa? Can the organization communicate adequately with the consumers, and vice versa? Can the various departments in the organization communicate well with other components of the company? Do you have any weaknesses in communication skills? Can you improve your communication skills? What are your strongest communication skills? Can you make these skills even stronger?